Welcome everyone to Rock'em Nation Podcast. This is a brand new episode of Dive Cuts. We are a top 10 SB Nation college podcast. And it's season 5, episode 27 of Dive Cuts. I can't believe we're already at this point. I'm your host, Sam Snelling. With me, as always, Matthew J. Harris. Matt, how are you?
I'm fine. I'm just so glad that we have...
That was my fourth intro.
It was your fourth intro. And I'm just so glad we have a relentless recruiter finally in the job of Missouri basketball coach. It's great to know that we had to be told 6 times today that Dennis Gates is a relentless recruiter. So I thought, just in case anybody missed that, I should reiterate it to start this podcast. Relentless recruiter.
Dennis Gates, the brand new, as of today, today is Tuesday, March 22nd, was presented as the brand new Missouri head basketball coach. And it was said maybe a couple times that he is a relentless recruiter. Relentless.
Not dogged, not determined, not tireless. He's relentless. We couldn't think of couldn't diversify our adjectives among 3 comm staffs.
He is without relent.
So relentless, he's going to get a restraining order. So much so that the law enforcement officials are going to have to intervene.
Or maybe NCAA officials, if he's outside the bounds of like the right contact periods. Who knows? We're all excited, right? Like it's something new, it's something different. The news broke. So we've been recording a lot of podcasts. So the news broke on Friday night as we were recording, and we did our best to react in real time. But we were about 2/3 of the way through the podcast already, and it becomes sort of difficult to sort of simmer with your thoughts. So Matt, I kind of thought at the time it would be a decent idea to put a poll out and just see what Mizzou fans were thinking at the time that the hire was announced. And it did not go well. It went so poorly that I felt the need to like write a column about it. So I believe it ended up being about 2-1, about 65 or 6% to 33% of people that were voting nay to the hire of Dennis Gates. Why do you think that is?
Name ID. It's like anything in politics that you're going to see, you know, a lot of those early polls that you'll see in any sort of campaign are really dependent upon name ID. And that's the job of, you know, MU's, you know, athletics comm staff, the university's comm staff to roll a guy out. That's what today was. It's today's sort of the crescendo of that is to, you know, get a guy out there, get his resume out there, get, you know, the key talking points, you know, hammered home, even if I think they lacked all nuance, but that's what it was. I mean, that's what the last 3 days have been, is to try and flip that number and get it at least close to 50-50. But I think a lot of it had to do with, you know, Cleveland State.
Which
was,
is what's the board of curators?
Board of curators.
Hober broke or something? No, board of curators, but the guy's name is like Hober broke or yeah. Something like that. Huber. Whatever the guy's name, Dave Matter quoted him as saying that fans were 50-50 on Gates, but they don't get to decide. We do. And I sort of commented at the time, like, you know, in our Slack channel, I'm like, you know, this is part of the problem with Missouri is board of curators think they have a say. Like, no, your job is rubber stamp this. Like, if you think your AD is hiring the wrong person.
We as an institution.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So, I mean, that's sort of how I interpreted it. And I kind of wanted to make fun of it a little bit because it sort of speaks to like this weird sort of disconnect. And, you know, I do remember there's a lot of fans probably remember, you know, Mike Alden basically trying to figure out if he's going to be able to hire Mike Anderson after they had agreed on a contract. You know, like they were meeting, trying to decide whether to fire Mike Alden or not. And it's just like, well, they fire the AD, then are you going to accept the coach? And then, like that, we almost lost Mike Anderson because of that.
Yeah. No, I'm not surprised that the reaction was the way it was, because Cleveland State was knocked out, you know, in the semifinals of the Horizon League final. So there had probably been about 10 or 11 days since Cleveland State played a basketball game. And over that period, you had, you know, Matt McMahon played in the NCAA tournament against Todd Golden. Jeff Linder had played the day before in the first four game. So you had three guys who played within 48 hours of each other. You know, Nico Medved, before he, you know, re-upped his extension, you know, was going to play Thursday. You may have had three coaching candidates in Indianapolis play on Thursday last week. So I think a lot of it had to do probably with name ID. And then obviously Kim English is going to score well in there. So you have four or five candidates, you know, that are playing, that are constantly, you know, not just in the mention for the Missouri job, but every job. So guys get, you know, fans get familiar with those resumes. They get familiar with those programs. And, you know, we wrote about Dennis Gates, you know, the first day we did the coaching search bracket. Dennis Gates was the first matchup. You know, I spent 2 hours reading about Dennis Gates and researching him and, you know, putting that together. And so I knew who Dennis Gates was, and I didn't think it was, you know, a horrendous choice. I just think it was an unexpected choice. And I think the fact that the numbers have flipped is sort of reflective of folks over the last couple of days have really sort of, one, digested it, and two, tried to like just get the barest of information on him. And I think that alone sort of, you know, and the fact that, you know, fans are want to be inherently optimistic at the start of a coaching search, or at the start of a coaching change. So I think that all plays into it. But I think a lot of it had to do with name ID. And, you know, as he's gained more exposure to the fan base over the last couple of days, that's flipped. So I'm not surprised at how it started. And I'm not surprised where it is right now as he was introduced today.
Yeah. So like I reran the poll today. Kind of trying to basically refute whatever the board curator's name was, saying that it was 50-50. Because, you know, I believe that, like, once people familiarize themselves more with who it is and what the guy is about and what his resume is, you know, that you're going to get, you know, a significant portion of the people that were voting nay the first time around kind of back to voting yay. And it got to the point, I think last I checked, it was like 85-15 were voting yay. So that's more than just a flip. That's, you know, essentially, cause I think you're probably what, at like 10-12% at least that are going to vote nay no matter what, just because they're just mad at Missouri basketball, and whenever Missouri basketball is going to do is probably going to be a bad thing. So screw that. I'm voting nay. Actually kind of caught a little flack in the comments for actually using the word miserable. But like, I don't necessarily, like, I'm not faulting those fans for feeling that way. Like I do think that there's a portion of the fan base that at this point are just miserable with Missouri basketball. It's been a long, long, tough road of bad basketball. And even you know, the 2 years that Konzo Martin made the NCAA tournament, like, those teams had some really, like, tough stretches of basketball.
Yeah.
So even in their good years recently, like, it's still been really tough. And, like, you go back to, like, the year before Kim Anderson arrived, like, Frank Hayes' year, like, finished on a real, you know, down note with that team kind of struggling throughout all of SEC play and basically getting flopped out of the SC tournament by, who was it, Southern Miss that they lost to?
Out of the NIT, yeah. Yeah.
It's just been a long time since Missouri basketball has been good. And so I just think people are just like, they're just tired. And like, I don't blame them. Like, I've been writing for the site since Kim Anderson started, so I'm tired myself.
Yeah, no, I think a lot of it has to do with, and probably the description too, you know, if you're trying to shorthand it in 256 characters, you know, you're going to say defensive minded, you know, stripped down kind of offensively, and, you know, not always the fastest pace in the world. That's going to automatically trigger folks to think they just hired Konzo Martin, you know, a redux with, you know, the hope that this guy's a better recruiter. And that's not inaccurate, but I don't think it's necessarily, you know, a straight comparison that, that is truthful. You know, I think if you were to watch, you know, the nuance is the key in anything here. If you watch Dennis Gates' teams, they're different than Konzo's teams are. I think in broad strokes, you could make a comparison that's pretty apt. But, you know, when you sit down and you queue up, you know, Cleveland State film, they don't look like Konzo Martin basketball teams. You know, there's a very different structure, style, and sort of intention behind how Dennis Gates' teams have played. So I think that needs to be set out of the chute. I think broadly speaking, though, my sense always was that fans wanted to shift away from, you know, what I would say a defense and toughness based sort of approach to basketball. I think folks wanted to, you know, see a Matt McMahon or a Todd Golden because, you know, there's, I would say it's a proactive style. You know, they want to play basketball on the front foot. They want to attack you. They run offense, you know, that's, you know, that is assertive in that way. And they get after you and they guard, but it's not where they're rooted as at that end of the floor, you know? And I think that that's something that I think fans want.
Same with Nico Medved too, who I've made several utterances that he was sort of the guy that was at the top of my list. But a very sort of similar thing where, you know, very known for his offense, but his teams have not really traditionally been very good defensively.
Right. And I think the one thing that's apt about the Medved comparison is, like, if you flip on a Dennis Gates game, you will see facets of Colorado State's offense in what Dennis Gates runs. But Dennis Gates is not a guy who's, you know, made his reputation as someone who, you know, melded all these different offenses together in a kind of unique hybrid system. He's a guy who, you know, has made his bones as a defensive, you know, as a defense-based coach at that end of the floor.
Relentless recruiter.
Right. And so I think it's just different, you know, stylistically. And, you know, that's the job, you know, that comes later, is to see what this looks like on the floor. I would disagree with the fact, you know, with the discussion that he plays, as Ezra Reed-Francois said, you know, that he, you know, plays a fast offense and, you know, tough defense. You know, they play at a pretty average pace, and they were in transition a lot this year, but they get in transition off of, you know, helter skelter kind of creating turnovers out of a 2-3 zone. They're not coming down and running, you know, the kind of fast, quick hitting offense that you know Todd Golden or Matt McMahon is. But again, that's you know, parsing the finest of hairs here at this point. But I think a lot of that kind of fed into the fan reaction was not a lot of name ID. And then when you like tried to like give a quick broad description of his approach, it sounded awfully familiar to Konzo Martin. And that's just going to set, you know, people off at this point. You know, why did you fire a coach, you know, to hire one that is basically the same? And, you know, I think that was sort of the initial reaction. We'll see, you know, where it is, you know, as we get closer to the season and, you know, as the roster turns over and stuff. But I think most people now, they've gotten some exposure to Dennis and sort of his background and what he's about, you know, in broad strokes, you know, here over the last couple of days. It's come around, and, you know, there's the natural sort of optimism. You know, people want to, you know, don't, you know, want to buy in and want to, you know, believe that this guy's going to turn it around. So I think it's a natural ebb and flow to it. And we'll see, you know, how good fans feel, you know, when they actually start playing basketball in, you know, November, and what this team looks like.
Well, and in his defense and in Konzo's also, like, a lot of the things that make Konzo an appealing person, an appealing coach, an appealing leader, a lot of the same traits are sort of the way people talk about Dennis Gates. You know, as being a good leader of men, of being, you know, the kind of person that you want.
A character builder.
Yeah, like all these kinds of things that, I mean, and realistically, like, that's what you want all your coaches to sort of be. They're not all like that. Like, they're not at all out here trying to, you know, make sure that their players are graduating and, you know, make sure that they're fine, upstanding citizens, and you know, like there's a lot of bad dudes in college coaching, and I think like we've kind of seen that, you know, but you can also sort of be somebody, like you can be all the things that Konzo is and still, like be more effective at putting a roster together, like you know, like so even if, like. It's clear to me. I mean, anybody who knows Konzo Martin has spoken highly of him. So like, there's nothing wrong with some of those traits kind of being in the next guy that you hire. The one thing that, that you want to see from Dennis Gates and from this new coaching staff, whoever it's going to be, is a more coherent plan of putting together a roster that makes sense. You know, and I realize that I feel like I have to say this all the time, but you know, like Konzo Martin's a good basketball coach, and people don't believe me when I say that, or they think I'm foolish for saying that. But he is a good basketball coach. He's just really, he was bad at Missouri, and I don't have enough evidence I don't have the evidence in front of me to look back and say whether he was better at Tennessee or better at Cal. But he was bad here at managing the roster. The guys he signed, all that kind of stuff, all the around the coaching thing that you have to do as a college basketball coach, he was bad at. And basically, like, my thought is, even if Dennis Gates is a Konzo clone, if he does a better job of the roster, like, he'll be fine. And I kind of believe that.
Yeah, and I think today a lot of it was, you know, I told you I went back and I watched just sort of what, you know, leadership said as they introduced Dennis. And, you know, you heard a lot of, you know, obviously aside from Relentless Recruiter, but you heard a lot of talk about, you know, an engaging brand of basketball that needs to capture hearts and minds, that needs to, you know, prove to the show me state, you know, that it's worth supporting. I think there's a lot of talk around that as to the fact that, and, you know, you and I talked about it at times, you know, Zoe wasn't a big marketer of the program himself or of himself at all.
Yeah.
No, I think he sort of let the product speak for him. And I think that was tough at times, you know, and I think that, you know, rightly or wrongly, it came off as aloof and dispassionate, which I don't think any of us would say that about Konzo Martin, you know, as a person, but in the way the program sort of marketed it itself, it didn't help. And I think that's what stood out to me today was there was a big push to sort of say, this guy's engaging. He's going to, you know, be out there. The program is going to be out there. It's going to play in a way that's going to want to put fans in the stands again. And I think that that's as much about what today was and as it was introducing a basketball coach, was to say, you know, we sort of hear you out there, that the program doesn't play in a way that's exciting, that doesn't have, you know, any sort of real connection, you know, that's deeply tangible to the fan base. And, you know, we'll see if Dennis Gates can do that. We'll see if he can sort of connect. You know, you heard connector mentioned three times. He's a connector, you know, with people. And I think that that's another thing that sort of came out here is, I think, you know, it's not hard to see, especially with the hire of Eli Drinkwitz, what at least Munchoy and what the board want in a figurehead for their two programs. They want someone who not only wins games and recruits, but somebody who's going to be able to market the program and the institution itself. So we'll see, you know, that's all ancillary again to what happens on the floor. But I think that's what I found interesting was there was a very concerted effort to sell this guy as someone who's going to be out there and going to try and connect and engage with the fan base again, and hopefully have the product do it in a way that that's going to make people want to buy in. So that was the other sort of thing that I took away from today. Everything else, you know, was sort of paint by numbers for a press conference introducing a coach, but
very paint by
it numbers. Wasn't very paint by numbers. You know, I don't think any of us walked away today, you know, with any, you know, granular sort of insight into what this program's going to look like. It was very much like a rallying around the flag type of moment for the institution, but I think it was worthwhile listening to what leadership was saying about what they wanted this hire to represent. And I think that was unmistakable, at least, is they want to get back to a point where this program's engaging and where it's bringing, you know, fans in to support the program and, you know, probably more importantly, to bring revenue through the door as well.
Yeah.
So that was worth kind of noting, I thought.
Well, and one thing, you know, I don't know if you, I think I was kind of advising you that you probably didn't need to watch the entire presser and like everything that Gates had to say. But one of the things that he did say that I did like that I feel hasn't been talked about is not only like every coach is going to come in and talk about winning championships, cutting down nets, et cetera, et cetera. He talked about NBA draft picks. And to me, like that's an important distinction, because you can talk about winning basketball all you want, but if you are not getting guys drafted, you are not building a kind of product that is going to win enough games. Like, and that's the reality. If you want to go to the Final Four, if you do want to cut down the nets at the end of the year, like, you know, win a national championship, you better have at least probably what, like 3 NBA draft picks on your roster, maybe 4.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
like that. This is the level of talent that you need. Like Baylor last year. Okay. Davion Mitchell,
Jared Butler,
both drafted.
And then you look at this year's roster, Jeremy Sohan, they've got, Kendall Brown, they've got guys. I mean, and they're going to get one next year in Keontae George. So you get dudes.
Yeah.
And
then like, even if you go back to like what 2019 and, was when Virginia, so I was kind of using like Baylor as an example. And then Virginia is a good example because those are non-blue blood schools. You know, schools that have had to kind of build up the hard way. And Virginia had what 4 NBA draft picks. So they had, you know, Kyle Guy and, DeAndre Hunter and, who is their point guard, Ty Jerome.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to say there was another dude. Who am I forgetting? Well, they also
was drafted by New Orleans this year.
Well, they also had, Mamadi,
Diakite.
So yeah, I mean like, you have NBA talent on your roster. So, like, we can talk all day about, and you and I kind of did a little bit before we came on the pod. I'm convinced that, like, the difference between, like, the best coach in the SEC and the worst coach in the SEC is marginal. Like, I'm not a big fan of, like, Nate Oates. And anybody who asks me, like, I'll tell you, like, I just don't think he's that great of a coach. I think he's a wonderful at the marketing side of it and really good at recruiting. As far as like putting a team on the floor that is far and away just in sync, like, I don't think he's somebody had said, like, what's the best basketball football coach in the country? And maybe Alabama, Nate Oates. I'm like, no, like, Nick Saban is an elite coach. Like, Nate Oates is not. Like, he's, in my opinion, probably bottom third in the conference. You know, but the difference between Nate Oates and like somebody who you would probably say is at the top of the conference, maybe like Eric Musselman, is not that great. Like, I think Muss is a great coach. I think he sucks, and I think his antics are tiresome. And I hate that he's being as successful as he is at Arkansas. But I think he's a really good basketball coach. But the difference between him and Nate Oates is marginal. You know, one guy's a little bit better at the other things. The main thing it comes down to is, like, are you able to get the players? Are you able to get the dudes to execute what you want to do? And, like, when it comes down to whether or not Missouri is successful or not, like, if Dennis Gates is here and he's getting multiple draft picks every year, Missouri is going to be winning a lot of games. Even if he's on the low end of the coaching in the league, which, you know, at this point, I don't know that we have a real clear idea on how good of a game day coach he is until, like, you really kind of sit there and get to watch him at this level.
Yeah. Interesting. The only other thing I thought was mildly noteworthy was when he was asked about NIL and saying, you know, it's just one part of a piece, you know, and I do, you know, I don't want to discount, you know, that money matters. You know, I've written a lot about it in the last couple of months, but I think the way Gates framed it, it's much more of a holistic sort of sense of what happens when you're bringing a kid in here. You know, they want to see, they want to look in the fans, in the stands and see, are fans here supporting us? Or they want to look on the floor and say, what does this product look like? How am I going to be playing? How am I going to be used? You know, they want to look at the bench and they want to see, you know, what's the internal culture of this team look like? And I think more broadly, they want to look at, you know, if I'm going to be here a year, am I going to like being on this campus for a year? You know, there's a lot more that sort of goes into it here. You know, I think we've sort of, maybe this is going to sound naive, I think we've sort of overrated the NIL piece here. You know, I think it's important. I think if you can offer kids that, it's going to be fine. But I think at the end of the day, to your point, if a school is offering a kid more money in NIL, maybe that sways them. But I think what they're going to do is they're going to look at it and say, okay, but how many guys are you putting in the league? You know, what, you know, that's going to be the countervailing sort of thing there. And if you're putting guys in the league, that's going to, I think, trump all at the end of the day. And
yeah, right. So right now, like, Dennis has a really good pitch in that he helped Leonard Hamilton put a lot of dudes in the league.
More so than Zoe at this point, I would say.
Yeah.
At least, so that's going to work in his favor. And he won battles, you know, for guys who were high recruits like Jonathan Isaac, or even like a Bryce Kamaji, who was maybe not as, you know, highly valued as a recruit. So I think he can go up and down the spectrum. You can look at the recruiting ratings and the composite ratings and sort of say, I've helped guys at different levels get to where they want to be. And that's attractive. And, you know, there were, you know, people, you know, I spoke to during the search, you know, who were, you know, saying, you know, this is going to be a big deal for guys that are going to try and want to keep in the fold. That's going to matter a lot. You know, where does Aiden Shaw want to be? You know, if, you know, he can love Zoe, he can love MU, but where does Aiden Shaw want to be? He wants to be in the league cashing checks. You know, if you look at where Trevon Brazil wants to be, you know, he wants to be in the league cashing checks. You know, these are, you know, at the end of the day, you know, you want to hope that guys like the institution too, but there's self-interest in play there. So it's, you know, I think, you know, we keep talking around it. It's going to be holistic and it's going to be interesting to see what, you know, Gates's method is and how that translates and how they go about roster building. But a lot of that's going to be, you know, we haven't seen the financials yet, but what has the institution armed him with as far as resources to build a staff to help him get those players and develop those guys. You know, the report today was that it wasn't an insubstantial sum, but it was also a reasonable sum, which leads me to believe that maybe Dennis maybe isn't making as much as Zoe, but is that money that, you know, maybe coming off the salary line there flowing towards maybe a staff pool?
Yeah.
You know, if that's the case, then that'll be certainly notable once all those contracts are out and once, you know, Dennis has a staff that he feels comfortable actually talking about in public. But, you know, that's the other piece, you know, he couldn't comment on today. But I mean, honestly, if he had just walked up there today and then and just said, hi, I'm Dennis Gates, here's who's on my staff, ask me questions, I would have been fine with that. You know, what matters now is brass tacks. You know, what's the staff going to look like? What's the roster building component going to look like? So that's really where my head is at as we sort of, you know, look back at today. You know, a lot of pomp, a lot of circumstance, you know, but who's on the staff and who's going to go try and get dudes? That's the brass tack matter.
Right. I think it's going to be really important to kind of see his contract. I really want to know what that staff pool is going to be, because some of the names that we've heard sort of floated as possibilities,
you're going to have to pay for them.
Yeah, like, they're not going to be cheap. I don't want to necessarily, you know, spoil anything yet, you know, because, like, I don't want to name anybody that might end up not taking the job. But, I mean, we're talking poaching some good assistants from some schools that are up the food chain compared to Missouri. So, like, if he's able to get even like some of the guys that we've sort of heard, like, I will be impressed, because
they'll cost more than Mike Porter Sr.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Mike Porter Sr. was making, I think, $375.
Was actually affordable, which was probably average for the SEC. He wasn't making an insane amount of money.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a 3-year deal for like 1.1 or 1.2, whatever it worked out to be. I think it was like roughly like $375K a year.
Yeah.
And I mean, like that. A few years ago, like Missouri had never really paid an assistant that much. So yeah, like that's a lot of money.
For Missouri.
For Missouri, but it's not for other schools. I think we even talked about this like recently, talking about the Orlando Antigua making $1 million at Kentucky, and you don't need to compete with Kentucky, but you need to compete with Illinois. You need to compete with Arkansas. And those are like their assistants are making $500,000, $450,000. Like they're making a lot of money. Yeah. And they do it because they can get dudes. And so like if I could see them luring a guy who's maybe, second or third on the bench at a bigger school, and bringing them in, and almost kind of like what Frank Haith did with Tim Fuller. Tim Fuller was at the end of the bench at Louisville and got like an associate head coach tag and a pay bump. But if you're able to do that, like I think there's a lot of value there. Because I mean, like we can all say what we want about Tim Fuller at this point. I mean, I still hear from him every once in a while. He's doing really well. And his recruiting methods, but he came in, he brought in talent. He helped get Jabari Brown, Jordan Clarkson, those are guys who are in the league, or at least Clarkson is. It's very, very, very important for the contract to be written in a way that gives Dennis Gates a lot of flexibility with his staff and being able to bring in guys who are going to help him get the kind of talent that you need to win in the SEC.
As much as that, too, it's going to be interesting where they want to go with the footprint of guys. Where are they going to try and put pipelines in? You presume that maybe you want to have someone with local ties in the building, just to help you, have some sort of outreach into Kansas City or St. Louis, or just in the state in general. It'd be interesting to see sort of what that looks like. But as we sort of talked about on Friday, Missouri's footprint is sort of weird at this point. It's not, deep in the Southeast, but it's also not in the Big Ten, but it's not in the Big 12. So you could, do you bring in someone who is going to try and help you maybe move into, Georgia, Florida, that type of area? Or are you going to get someone who's going to get you into Chicago and the upper Midwest? We saw, Cornell Mann brought in, and there was sort of the talk of his connections in Michigan, which netted one player. So it'll be interesting to see sort of what the makeup of the staff is and where their sort of geographic areas are and where Missouri tries to build this out. I think you're going to need someone who, Dennis Gates, can, try and, develop those relationships. He's going to have good relationships with local high school coaches. But is there someone, you can bring in, that can help tee him up for success. And then just the balancing act of, you look at his staff at Ohio, at Cleveland State, he did that. He hired Drew Joyce, whose dad coaches St. Vincent St. Mary's, where I think everybody knows LeBron James played. But Drew Joyce was brought in to be their director of recruiting and their special teams coach. So he basically designed ATOs, B-lobs, and handled recruiting in Northeast Ohio. They brought in Ryan Sharbaugh as their offensive coordinator, but he had connections across the state of Ohio. And then their defensive coordinator was a guy who had been a GA at Florida State under Leonard and had been at Bradley. So he had connections into sort of Illinois and Indiana and stuff. So what does the staff composition sort of look like, and how does he flesh that out? And, what are they going to be willing to pay to get someone in the door here, to get people in the door to help him do that? That's sort of the next piece. That'll be worth watching over the next couple of weeks.
So, aside from that, as soon as we have contract details, I think we're going to try to get a breakdown. And now that we have a lawyer on staff, like, we'll actually be able to make sure that it's parsed out. And any lawyerly language that might be in there, Matt Watkins will be able to break down for us, which I think will be helpful.
In-house counsel is always nice.
In the meantime, like, the roster. Yeah, in-house counsel. Just refer to Watkins as that now. But in the meantime, like, we should probably talk about this roster. Since the news broke, I guess, that Trevor Brazile is entering the transfer portal, as is Javon Pickett. I was sort of curious if Javon was going to try to play another year. I'm actually kind of happy that he is, and I hope he's able to find a program where he fits. I don't think it's going to be at Missouri. I think you know, Gates is probably a guy who wants to use all his available scholarships on some new blood. But I also don't think that we've seen the end of the transfer portal. Like, I really think there's going to be a lot more of the team going into the portal and at least sort of checking their options. And truth be told, like, I really think that they should all do that. Like, if you have the ability to transfer to a different place where you feel more at home, you know, because the coach that you committed to play for is not there anymore, then I think you should do that. And so I don't think we've seen the end of it, but thoughts on, you know, well, let's just start with Brazil, since he's probably the headliner here. Thoughts on Brazil going into the portal?
We've known at least for a couple of days that this was imminent. The post indicated as much. We've had to try and tweak that, and that went up. But this is,
I think some of the verbiage might still be a little out.
It might still be, but this was not a shock. I mean, I that's the one thing I would say to folks is, you know, we've tried to talk around it or be oblique, kind of, you know, oblique or obtuse about it, but this is not a shock that this has happened. You know,
this was
going to
happen
interest.
No matter who the coach was, too. Like,
it was going to happen no matter, and
no matter what happened. You know, frankly, like, if Zoe was retained, he was going to go in. If Zoe was fired, he was going to go in. If they, no matter who they hired, he was going to go in. Like, he was going to go in no matter what.
And it may not matter if Dennis is here, if he's going to be back or not. Maybe just the level of programs that are, you know, touching base with, you know, Trevin are, it's going to make it really hard to have a rebuild year, you know, worthwhile for him. So I would sort of say that one is dicey. The question will be, you know, does Anton Brookshire want to decouple his future from Trevin's? And I think the one thing, that's where the style of play is going to matter here. Offensively, at least how Dennis Gates played at Cleveland State, I don't know if he's necessarily a fit for Anton Brookshire. Now, we've got to see what that change, if there's any stylistic change when, you know, he comes in, you know, as he moves up to a high major level. But at least from what I've been able to see at Cleveland State, there's not a ton of overlap, at least in terms of how Anton Brookshire's played. Trevin Brazile would absolutely fit with what Dennis Gates wants to do. But particularly with Dennis Gates. Yeah. But the level of suitor he's going to have, I think, is going to make that hard. Now, if Dennis convinces him to stay and pulls that off, that might be his biggest recruiting coup that he's going to have. You know, I think you look at a guy like Aiden Shaw would fit, you know, with what Dennis Gates wants. But again, Aiden Shaw would fit with what a lot of guys want. The real question is going to be, you know, does Anton Brookshire decide that this is a place he wants to stay and, you know, where the fit is there? And if he's going to move on, is he going to try and move to a place where Trevin Brazile is, or is he going to really look, you know, and I think you and I have talked about this, you know, I know they come from the same high school, they come from the same AAU program, but is it time for him to sort of say, okay, I need to look out at what fit is absolutely best for me. And, you know, I need to go someplace where I know I'm going to, you know, get minutes at this point. You know, I think that, you know, I yin and yang, you know, between, you know, how much, you know, guys get better in practice and practice matters versus at some point you need to log minutes. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of where Anton is, you know, I think, you know, wherever he goes, if he can find the scheme fit and he can show that he can get better in practice, that's fine. But if he can get to a place where he's playing 18, 20 minutes a night, you know, 600 minutes in a season, I think that's going to be what benefits him most, is and finding a place that's going to do that, give him that opportunity, I think is sort of paramount. But I don't know what your thoughts are sort of on both those guys, because that Anton Bruchard feels like kind of the guy who's maybe got kind of the most sort of figure out here as he goes, you know, about finding a new place to play potentially.
Well, so I do know that there is at least an existing relationship enough that both of those guys are, we'll just say that they're more interested in listening to this staff than before. I don't think that necessarily means that they're going to come back. I don't, you know, like, and this goes for both guys. But having at least something there does matter. So both those guys could come back. Whether or not they do, you know, it will come down to like what they want to do. And that's like the tough thing is, you know, if either guy has got a better offer, you know, has a more clearly defined role from a coach who's done it with players that are, you know, similar to them and have, you know, and produced good results and all that kind of stuff, and clearly you're probably looking at watching both of them go. You know, if I'm Dennis Gates, like the first thing I'm doing is I'm trying to make sure really both those guys come back. I think Anton, would benefit a lot. And like one of the things that you and I were kind of talking about before we kind of came on the podcast, and one of the things that I found fascinating with this whole like Gates thing is I don't go for like the platitudes. I understand coaches have to say them, and like if it's a press conference, like you're not really getting into the dirt or the weeds of, you know, of what, you know, your core beliefs as a coach are. But there's a podcast that Rock'em Nation retweeted from Chris Oliver, who does Basketball Immersion. He does a really, really good podcast. They get really, really deep. If you're a basketball nerd like Matt and I are, then I suspect that you will enjoy it. But he interviewed Dennis Gates a couple years ago. You know, and I think if my memory is correct, like I think Gates has like a master's
in adult education.
Yeah, adult education. So he has like a deeper understanding of how people learn, than probably your average basketball coach. And listening to that conversation was fascinating, because it's basically a guy who understands like learning at a secondary college, you know, graduate level understanding, and essentially applying it to how it works in basketball and how he conducts practices, how he interacts with his players, what his beliefs are, and how you sort of put players in different positions. And it's really like, it was just a fascinating conversation. And so that's one of the reasons why I think somebody like Anton could really benefit from being around somebody, because Zoe is a little more old school, you know, where he's a little bit more close to the vest. He wants you to go out and kind of do your hard work and prove yourself through the hard work. And I do think that there are players who absolutely connect with Zoe, and there are players who absolutely do not connect with him. And I think like that's one of the like I think Trey Jackson is probably a good example of a guy who you know, just didn't connect, didn't have you know, the right tutorship from Martin. And I think Anton Brookshire is very, very similar. And maybe somebody like Dennis Gates, who, you know, as he gets to know these guys, like maybe somebody like that is exactly what Anton needs. Because I still believe in Anton's talent. I still think he's a guy. I mean, there was nothing that I saw from him this year that I thought, oh man, he's ready to blow things out of the water. But as like a rotational guy, like in the future, I think he could be a really good player. Like he still shoots the ball well. Like, you know, he can handle the ball well. He sees the floor well. If he can figure the things out, then I think you've got a really good player for multiple years. And I think that there's value in that. So I don't know, like I could see kind of both sides of Dennis Basie saying, you know what, I'm going to go and take the scholarships that I have available, and really focus on kind of setting something new for this program, and focusing on guys that I think are maybe more desirable, like Aiden Shaw, Trevin Brazil. But I think there's a lot of value in Anton.
And as we sort of read about, and you know, Matt's worked on, you know, a little bit over the weekend, there are deep connections in the JUCO ranks too that I think you have to consider as this roster building process moves forward. You know, Missouri had offered two JUCO guys, and Sean East and DeShondre Washington. And the nice part about sort of that facet there is, you know, those are guys when there's connections at those programs, and it's a market that, you know, those guys will tell you they love Dennis Gates and that he does a really, really good job recruiting in that space and he's respected by coaches. Those are two top 10 JUCO players. Now, what that means relative to like a top 10, you know, high school prospect, wildly different, but those are guys that if you're looking for a scoring point and a jumbo wing, both those guys fit the bill. And, you know, if you needed to, you know, especially I think of DeShondre Washington with deep connections in the Florida JUCOs where Dennis has been, if you wanted to go get a guy like that, you know, I don't know how, you know, much Missouri had even been recruiting him prior to Konzo being dismissed. I know he had had an offer from last fall, but, you know, do you go and you sort of try and work at that JUCO level to find some guys to sort of do what we're talking about here, which is, you know, if you can keep Aiden Shaw in the fold and you can keep Trevin Brazil, you know, as your sort of guys who are going to be maybe your upper tier pieces, you can be able to find guys in the JUCO ranks who can sort of give you some immediate impact there. Or do you use that spot for Anton Brookshire and say, hey, we can get something out of this guy? So that, I think that's going to be interesting. Dennis, you know, when he was at Cleveland State, didn't really go into the transfer portal as heavily as he went into the JUCO ranks. That was sort of an area where he felt, talent was under-evaluated and undervalued. So that'll be interesting if he goes into that space and tries to, you know, fill a couple of spots that way. You know, I think that could be effective, you know, as you're trying to fill four spots. But who knows? We're probably not going to see the last, you know, bit of roster turnover here. You know, four is, I think last year the SEC saw six or seven spots turnover usually. So that would, if we had another year, actually, that's three spots left that could probably turn over, and that's, you know, before you consider a coaching change.
Do you have any thoughts on Javon?
If you wanted to keep him around, I think this is, as a culture guy and as a locker room guy, you know, and as a guy who brings work ethic, I think there's definitely, you know, potential there. Does he want to stick around? That's really something, you know, I think he's got to ask. He's got a COVID year. Does he want to spend a COVID year in a reboot? You know, if I were Javon, I would want to go find a place where I'm going to have a chance, you know, to contend for the postseason, to maybe, whether that's dropping down to a mid-major plus program, you know, where I can maybe, you know, come in and be a key contributor on a team that I think can get to an NCAA tournament, or going to a, like doing what Mark Smith did and trying to go and become a rotational guy at a high major that's trying to, you know, get into the mix for a, you know, on the bubble. You know, I don't know how he'll be evaluated in the transfer market, you know, at this point, but if it were me and I had, you know, graduated and I had a free pass and I could go somewhere No, I would probably look outside of where I'd been just to, you know, give myself a chance to maximize that 1 year. So if you wanted to stay and, you know, continue to be a guy who can lend some experience and, you know, an old head to the roster, fine. I just think if I were Javon, I would want to go out and give myself a chance to absolutely maximize the COVID year I got. So,
and probably
I'm not
also
trying to push
like,
him out.
You know, like the likelihood of Missouri, you know, turning around and you know, being good, playing in an NCAA tournament next year, pretty low. So maybe go find a place where you can win, like in your last year. I think, you know, like even if it means maybe, you know, dropping down a level, you know, going to like the A-10 or NBC, like I just think, you know, I think, you know, Pickett's going to be a guy who can find value at a lot of different rosters. You know,
he's played a lot of minutes. He's been valuable. It's, as you know, a floor space kind of guy, a guy who can catch on that weak side, rip and go. He's going to compete on the glass. You know, he works hard. We know that. There's a lot of things that I think a lot of coaches would see in him and say, yeah, I want to have that guy in my program and you know, impart some of that experience to my guys and stuff. It's just, it's what does he want out of that 1 year? And if it aligns with what Dennis wants to do here.
So with that said, did we get on all the topics that we said we were going to? Did we miss anything?
No, we got to staff, we got to, you know, the transfer portal, and we covered Dennis's unveiling to the masses. I think we've done enough potting. We've done.
There's been a lot of podcasts.
Probably 3 hours of potting in the last week.
But I do think
the horse has been sufficiently beaten.
Yeah. I do think that we're going to go again next week before we switch to full off-season mode. Before the box score is going to review the spring game and all that stuff, I believe, this week. So that'll kind of put us in an every other week setup for everybody's off-season enjoyment. But yeah, so I think next week, by then we should have the contract. We should have a better idea. Maybe there's... you know, a hire made. If I remember correctly, Gonzo, like everybody knew Michael Porter Sr. was coming back to Missouri. And even that took like 5 days, I think, 6 days, something like that, before it was announced. So it would not surprise me if we didn't have an announcement on a new coach or an assistant coach for another week. Or maybe there's something tomorrow. But either way. Next week, we will have contracts, hopefully by then, to kind of talk about what kind of assistant pool we'll be dealing with, what kind of names you can get. And then by then, we should also probably have a pretty clear idea of some of the people that that Dennis Gates has reached out to as far as, you know, who he may want to add to the roster for next year. So I think the next probably 3-4 weeks are going to be... interesting. There's going to be a lot of news happening, and we will be there to cover it all. So anything else you want to say before we get out of here?
Nope. I think we've covered it all.
Matt, I'm tired of talking to you. It's been too many podcasts recently. We'll be back next week. Make sure you do follow Matt for all your Mizzou basketball needs, at, Matt J. Harris 85. You're doing a good job of getting out there, talking to some coaches and seeing what the playing style is going to be like, what we can expect from a Dennis Gates team. So be on the lookout for that. Make sure you're also following at Data Mizzou. Our good friend Matt Watkins is doing all kinds of fun, interesting coverage. He actually talked to some of the JUCO coaches, and we're going to get some quotes from them on how much they love Dennis Gates. And then you can also follow me, Sam P. Snelling. I'm mostly just, you know, tweeting out nonsense, but that's where we are. That's what Twitter's for, right? make sure you subscribe to the podcast so you can get this and all of our other podcasts streamed straight to your phone. And then we'll be back next week with more Dive Cuts. Until then, thanks for joining us.